This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're now tuning into The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Karnison with Lynn Mark and Noel Lim in the studio this morning. And we've got an exciting show lined up for you. Actually, a particularly exciting breakfast grill. Because, Noel, today you're interviewing Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, our former Prime Minister and possible future Prime Minister, you think?
Well, who knows, right? He will come back as number 9
for the third time.
Yeah, I think, I'm certainly looking forward to that interview. I mean, I think it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to speak to him.
They do say third time's the charm, so who knows, right?
Really, who knows when it comes to him.
Yes, Mahathir. But that's happening at 8 a.m. on the breakfast grill, as it is every day. But in the meantime, during this hour, we like to take a look at the lighter side of things. Maybe talk about a bit of existentialism. Lynn, what are we taking a look at in about 10 to 15 minutes?
So in about 10 to 15 minutes, we are talking about whether or not this pandemic situation has made you more or less environmentally conscious. Because while I know some people have probably had to let it quietly drop to the wayside, you know, other concerns, other people have become even more conscious during this time. Which side do you fall on?
Very interesting. And I'll tell you which side I fall on later in a little bit. Noel, what are we doing for international news today? What's rocking the world today?
Well, you know, as usual, we always try to bring you across the world, right? So, but this time we are looking at China, the Philippines, as well as Italy.
Ah, so well, while you may not be able to fly during this time, we'll try and take you where we can.
We bring the world to you.
And of course, towards the end of the hour, we'll take a look at the local papers and portals and keep you up to date on what's on the front pages. Well, when we come back after this song, we're going to talk about toxic positivity. Is that something that is maybe bothering you if everyone just says, be positive? And to take you there, we've got Diary of Horace Wimp by Electric Light Orchestra. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Morning Run. That was Diary of Horace Wimp by Electric Light Orchestra off their 1979 album, Discovery. And you're with me, Roshan Karnison, Lynn Mark, and Noel Lim. Right now, we're taking a look at positivity and whether too much can turn toxic. I turn straight away to the both of you. What do you think? Too much of a good thing, positivity?
Okay, so I think it's always constructive to look on the bright side. I think what is really important is that when we try to layer some positive thoughts or, you know, some positive speech over something that we may be feeling bad about, I think it's okay if those stories that we tell ourselves do reflect reality. Sometimes they don't, right? Sometimes we're just saying it for the sake of trying to feel better, trying to make ourselves feel better and try to tell ourselves, okay, we shouldn't be so negative and we should be positive. And that's where actually the problem is, right? Then it leads to suppression, then it leads to anxiety, then it leads to depression. And so this is really what that story is about. So then I think the question is, I think first of all, I think it's how you reach to a point where you're calm and you feel like you've gotten over your emotional hump before you then decide to see, before you decide to analyze your thoughts.
I actually think this is a bit of a societal issue because human beings find conflict difficult, right? It's a natural part of interaction. But here in Asia particularly, we don't talk about our feelings very often. It's only in the past maybe 10, 15 years that people have started really acknowledging things like, you know, mental health difficulties, things like burnout in the workplace. And, you know, toxic positivity, it can really... I have seen it happen in the workplace. I've seen it happen on a personal level. Someone I know, okay, this is a bit of an extreme example, but, you know, it just goes to show. Someone I know lost a child. And it was obviously really tragic and she was really depressed. And what she got told was, it's okay, look on the bright side, you'll have another. That's a really terrible thing to say, right? Because it completely invalidates a person's feelings. And in the workplace, obviously you don't get examples that extreme, but it does do the same thing. When someone, particularly someone in a position of power, says, you know, yes, we have all these problems, but look on the bright side. It means that you are kind of gently sliding those problems under the rug away. You maybe don't want to deal with it, and that can fester.
And so one problem is suck it up and just deal with it. That could be another narrative that people like to use.
Yeah, and of course there are always two sides to that coin, right? But it's the perpetual positivity that's becoming, I think, a bit of an issue in general. Or at least people, I feel that perpetual positivity is a form of denial. You're not really acknowledging the issues underlying. And of course, there's always a silver lining and things to be positive about and things to look at. But if you're not addressing the issues, underlying issues, there are going issues are going to fester, right? So these are some of the common phrases that use things like, well, at least, it, right? Or it could have been worse. Or look on the bright side. It doesn't have to be as negative, extreme as the example that Lynn gave, but it's also just anything in your normal daily life, right? And I myself also, when I used to struggle with my own health concerns, this was something that, well, at least you are this. And I'm like, yes, I acknowledge the privilege and I'm very grateful for all the things I have, but at the same time, it doesn't offset the fact that this is the way it is. And I think there's one thing in this Fast Company article that I really quite liked, and I'm just going to read it out here. Toxic positivity can also ramp up triangulation if, for example, a leader focuses on getting teams to be positive and is not actually listening to what people are struggling with. Then that person who is struggling with will start talking to others instead of going directly to the person who could help them solve the challenge. When healthy conflict and honest conversations are discouraged, business performance and results will suffer. Now, this is not just about company leaders or businesses. It's also about families and friends and anyone you have a relationship with. The minute the automatic response or the only response is, hey, it could be worse, that's going to start a breeding ground for negative emotions in the long run.
So, I mean, on the flip side as well, right? Sometimes we get stuck in a negativity rut, and it can help sometimes to have some
spiral of doom.
Yeah, it's a spiral of doom, and it can sometimes help to be reminded that actually, you know, it's not all doom and gloom. You know, it's not raining every hour of every day. There are some bright sides to be seen, but it is when that positivity kind of goes a little bit over the top and doesn't acknowledge maybe the source of the unhappiness in the first place on a persistent basis that this can really kind of become a much larger problem, I think.
Yeah. So I think the encouragement is, first and foremost, if you're feeling, you know, rather uncomfortable, there are some, you know, emotions there that you're trying to process, I think the encouragement is to lean in on those emotions, right? To just allow them to be there, whether they are what your mind perceives them to be, negative or positive. But to just say, hey, I have this range of emotions and it's fine because I'm a human being. And then once mm-hmm. you know, allow yourself to process all that emotions in your body and all that, then I think it's then taking a very calm and look at, you know, what's the situation, maybe reframing some thoughts. Some could say it's about positive thoughts, but, you know, it could be like, okay, it's not all doom and gloom. How can I proceed further? What's the best step for me moving forward? And then if there are more thoughts that continue to bother you, then it's a question of how important are these thoughts, right? I mean, does this help support me in achieving what I desire in my life? And then we then just start to reprioritize what we want to think and where we want to put our attention.
Oh, no, well, I give you 100/100 for that right there, because it was, it covered everything, right? Essentially, you don't want to look at there are times to look at the bright side. There are times to acknowledge what you're going through. Really, you have to know who you are on the inside, not to sound too wishy-washy this morning. But hey, let us know what you think over on Twitter at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We do always like hearing from you. And right now, we're going into a few messages and we'll be back in just a little bit. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. And that was psychedelic rock band Unknown Mortal Orchestra with Shakedown Street. And you're back with The Morning Run with me, Roshan Kanesan, Noel Lim, and Lin Wang. Sorry, I almost called you Wong Shaning.
Did you forget
yes.
who I was?
Yes, I did. Sorry about that. But
it's okay. Wow. It's okay, Lin. Chill.
It's okay. It's not like you haven't
walking
forgotten.
Walking out of the studio.
We just had that talk set about toxic positivity.
Yeah.
Well, it could have been worse, Lin. So let's take a look at this next story, right? We're talking about positivity. Now, the last 12 months has not been the most positive. I think that's quite a clear fact, something that we've all acknowledged. But this BBC article is quite interesting because it says that some people are becoming, based on an Accenture survey, that more people are becoming more ethically and environmentally conscious. But I wonder whether this is just something that the demographic in the Western world is facing. I haven't really seen that happen here as much. What about the both of you?
Okay, I can tell you what really bugged me was the fact we were using disposable masks. Mm. And, you know, and you know, every day you just throw it away, right? And I think it's such a waste. And that's why I got a reusable mask. And I have to say, that is about the most, I think, environmentally conscious decision that I made. I don't think I made more ethically conscious decisions on other things. But maybe I've become more health conscious. Like, maybe I'll try to eat some organic vegetables, but not all the time because they're quite expensive or more expensive than the normal vegetables. And also, I think I've become more mindful of buying local products. I never used to think so much about it, like, you know, buying from local entrepreneurs. But now I'm quite intentional. If I see a new ad and someone's like really talking a lot of nice things about it, I will place an order.
Yeah, I guess it for me, it's also a little bit of the same, right? I was bugged by how much plastic single-use things we had to use as a result of trying to mitigate a global pandemic. And I really disliked using the disposable masks. So I got a reusable one, multiple reusable ones. And I find that I have become a little bit more environmentally and ethically conscious. I used to be a little bit more blasé about, you know, going to the supermarket. Yeah, plastic bags. Yeah, okay, you know, it's just another three plastic bags. But since the pandemic, particularly also because going to the supermarket is a bit more of an expedition, and you have to plan it a little bit more. As a result, as a part of that planning, I'm like, okay, I'm going to take a reusable bag. Or if I can't, you know, if for some reason my reusable net bag's not easily available, okay, this place has reusable bags for sale, I can get one there. So that has become a little bit more of a common part of my consciousness. What about you, Roshan?
Well, I've not to brag or anything, but I was already quite conscious about these things from before.
So much, not I much hated, change?
I hated takeaway cups. I hated plastics taking away. I actually stopped using as much as possible plastic bags from 2008, actually. And I can't remember why I did this, but it happened. And the household is like that as well. Now, what I've noticed is that, but there is a line, right? End of the day, people need to get food and we need businesses to survive. And we're going to, these single-used items are going to increase, right? In this era of where delivery is more rampant. The F&B industry, I mean, we're going through a second lockdown right now. The F&B industry is suffering because of this. I mean, and I understand, I don't like it, but end of the day, when you look at at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, things like the environment and ethically conscious things are self-actualized concepts, right? Right now, we're all just trying to take care of our physical and security needs. And that includes putting food on the table or being able to support the local business or whatever that is.
See, that's why I find this article quite interesting.
Because it is.
That was my assumption as well. And the fact that kind of more people are nevertheless becoming more environmentally and ethically conscious during this time, when you would assume that they'd be just like prioritizing putting food on the table.
Correct. So it could be a matter of just the demographic, right? Because end of the day, maybe more developed nations have more support in different ways to go about their lives, where else developing nations can't really think about that. Even in our own society, there are going to be people who are more conscious about these things, but there is a certain level of privilege and maybe a certain level of socioeconomic status that they're at, that they can think about these things. If you're struggling to put food on the table, or you've lost your job or have faced a pay cut, the plastic consumption is the least of your concern. So that's why exactly, Lynn, like, when I saw this article, I was very surprised by it. I like the fact that the survey does indicate that there is a positive trend to this, but at the same time, it's a survey also, right? Maybe people think they're a certain way, but not exactly what does it mean to be what does it mean that you think you are more ethically environmentally conscious if you came from a very low base? Right? Maybe it means that you just say, I don't want to take the disposable cutlery, but I'll take the plastic bags along. So it's there are a lot of details here that need to be ironed out. But that said, though, with the decrease in movements, and we saw oil demand fall last year because of that, there's been less petrol consumption, there's less emissions. That is something that's been happening. But on the offside, we're using more energy because we're at home more, right? So, I know the environment is important, but I don't know how much COVID-19 has detracted that.
Yes, I think my decisions are still very much driven by financial. So, for example, if organic food and all that, the price margin is not huge between organic and non-organic, I would surely adopt organic. But right now, I feel the margin is quite big. And also because when they started charging for plastic bags, I said, oh, okay, it's okay, I don't need plastic bags. But if it's free, I'll be like,
good to know,
okay,
that worked.
I could do with a plastic bag, you know, to keep my other bag clean.
So here are a few pro tips, right? Keep a reusable bag in your backpack or your office bag. Keep them in your car. Keep them at the front door of your house. That way you never forget about them. And also, get a tiffin carrier, leave it in your car. That always helps.
All right. Well, that's a very good tips and tricks there from, admittedly, from the person that has been doing this since 2008. So, you know, fair enough.
But there are, but on the bright side, there are people who have been doing this for way, way longer, right? And if, but
you've been doing this for way longer than either Noelle or I have, Roshan. So I think you're our best touch point right now.
The question is here, though. To all of you listening right now, has the pandemic made you more or less ethically or environmentally conscious? And remember, there is no right or wrong answer here, only how you feel about this matter. You can let us know over at BFM Radio on Twitter or over WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. Up next, we've got the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin, and then we take a look at the international news. Keep it here to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Morning Run. That was The Heavy with How You Like Me Now. And you're with Lynn Mark. I have to introduce myself first. I'm Roshan Kanesan with Lynn Mark and Noah Lim. And you're listening to The Morning Run. And we're taking you through international news right now. And we're starting off with a bit of news around China denying two WHO members from entering the country after they failed their COVID-19 tests.
Yeah, so it was a bit of a rocky start to the WHO's mission to try and trace the origins of COVID-19. Two members of the 15-person delegation were denied entry after failing to clear health screening procedures. So they were stopped from boarding a plane to Wuhan after testing positive for COVID-19 antibodies in serology tests during transit in Singapore, although they did test negative for COVID-19 in swab tests, according to the Dow Jones, who was quoting sources. So the WHO later confirmed that the two scientists were stuck in the city-state, as a video showed the others arriving in Wuhan around noon.
Yeah, so I think the Chinese government was approached for comments, and I think the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson said that their visas will be valid long enough for them to conduct their work in China. And although he didn't specify how long they would be quarantined, I guess it's always that 14 or 21 days, right? I mean, it can't possibly be more longer than that.
Yeah, and I guess this also shows you the inkling of what travel could look like going forward, right? Because what this it's not that they were stopped when they entered China. It is in transit in Singapore that they got tested and that, hey, okay, listen, you two you can't move any further from this point. So I wonder, yes, we have vaccine optimism and all of that, but as we go forward, things like this could become more of a norm when we travel.
Yeah, I think, Noel, a while back you had a breakfast grill with Mario Hardy of the Pacific Asia Travel Association, right? And I think one of the things that was discussed was just not the normalization, but the standardization of testing requirements between individual countries. And this is something that if countries do want to open up travel lanes or travel bubbles or green zones, whatever have you, they are going to have to iron this out, right? Because China in November put in place requirements not just for negative results of a nucleic acid test, but also for negative test results of an antibody test for any inbound travelers. So this was a measure to tighten safeguards to ensure that anyone arriving from abroad didn't bring in the coronavirus. So I don't know whether that's something that other countries necessarily have put in place. Some like Thailand, you know, others have said negative test, but what does that negative test generally mean?
Yes, I think every country will have their own standards of what they want, the kind of standards of testing that they want, right? Because also depends how dire the situation is. And because China had worked very hard to, you know, to lower the number of cases, and naturally I can understand their kind of caution that they want to take. Added to that, not just about testing, it's also about vaccination. I mean, you know, towards the end of the year, that also might be imposed, right, before you can travel. Do you have a vaccine certificate, and will all vaccines be accepted? Will the Chinese and the Russian vaccination be accepted? So I think your vaccine passport or certificate is going to be your new currency to travel.
And on that note, Noel, actually there was some news that major companies, health organizations and nonprofits announced Thursday morning in the US, so yesterday evening, that they were working together to create digital vaccination passports so that people could prove their COVID-19 immunization status. And of course, this is going to be called the Vaccination Credential Initiative, shortened to VCI. And it's a coalition that includes big tech names like Microsoft, Oracle, Salesforce, Cerner, Epic Systems, and the Mayo Clinic as well. So we've got a bit of a mix of companies here, and let's see how this goes. But all this just goes to show you the changing dynamics of travel, right?
And it's not unusual, right? Because if you've ever been a student going to study in the UK, you will have had to have a certain number of vaccines, you will have to have had a tuberculosis test. So these are things that are already in place. So COVID-19 may one day in the distant future be just another box to check before you want to travel to a different country.
All right. And while we're on the note of, we were talking about China, let's talk about President Xi Jinping and his relationship with Starbucks Corporation, because apparently he's called on the founder of Starbucks and I think current CEO Howard Schultz to come save the day.
Yes, so you might recall, Mr. Schultz, I think, wanted to run for presidency, right?
As an independent.
Yes, and then he withdrew his application and then threw his support for Biden. So maybe Schultz is seen to be a friendly figure to the Chinese. After all, Starbucks, I think, it's huge in China, although there are some Chinese copies of Starbucks, right? They look quite similar. But anyway, I think it's just Beijing's way of using soft power, getting into the business community to build some alliances there.
Yeah, so Xi Jinping's words were, "I hope Starbucks will make active efforts to promote China-US economic and trade cooperation and the development of bilateral relations." Really sounds like he's deputizing the CEO of Starbucks as an ambassador.
If you wanted some business chamber commerce, you should get Starbucks on board. You should get Tim Cook on board from Apple. Get Satya Nadella there. And you've got the trifecta of people. You've covered the sectors, right? But, you know, all this, we'll be paying more attention to all the developments between US and China, especially as we go into the new US administration. In fact, in an hour, we'll be covering the possible Saudi US relations on the show. But right now, we're going into a few messages. When we come back, we'll take a look at the local papers and portals. So keep it here to BFM 89.9. Good morning and welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanesan with Lynn Mark and Noel Lim in the studio this morning. And that was English indie pop band The Primitives with their best-known international hit single, actually, Crash, from 1988. Now, taking a look at what we have on the local papers and portals, let's take a look at what's on the Star, Lynn. What do you have there?
So the front page of the Star here is lessons well learned. So while consumer groups are asking for more clarity from the government on MCO 2.0, food operators and some businesses are still trying to reach out to their customers by applying some of the lessons they learned from lockdown last March. So this is a story continued on page 4 of the Star. And actually on the top of page 4 here, the quote that they've used is, "Be clearer about essential services." And I think this is something that has been flying around the papers and portals recently. The fact that shopping malls are allowed to open has been a bit of a source of criticism. And the question over which stores are considered essential services and therefore able to open, apparently some jewellery stores have been open during this MCO. So which raised some questions of why is this an essential service?
It may be essential to some people. I'm just being facetious here. But yeah. So, you know, we need to prioritise, right?
Yeah, it's confusion generally, I think, over these guidelines.
Yeah. Actually, on that note, though, in about 20-25 minutes, we'll be speaking to Salim Bashir, president of the Malaysian Bar, to find out how the legal system is doing under all this. The legal businesses, right, and the law firms, they have to, because cases have been postponed. So I'm sure that puts a damper on things on that part. So we'll get a bit more insight into all of that. Noel, you've got the New Straits Times in front of you. What are they? What's the headline there? What are they talking about today?
Naturally, COVID-19 still occupies the first few pages. And so the NSD spoke to an expert, Associate Professor Dr. Malina Osman. She is saying that it will take at least a year from where the inoculation exercise begins before a significant segment of the population gains some herd immunity. And I think we're looking at least 50% of the population. They need to be vaccinated first before we can, you know, meaningfully bring down COVID-19 or to, you know, really just sustain a very low number of cases. And as we know, yesterday we broke that highest number, right? 3,337 infections in the past 24 hours.
Yeah, and on the vaccine note, at 7:45. We'll be talking to Emeritus Professor P.T. Thomas, Executive Dean at Taylor's University for the Faculty and Health of Health and Medical Sciences, to basically get a bit of clarity over why different countries have different efficacy rates for some vaccines, like the Sinovac vaccine. I think we had that Brazil number, right, where the efficacy rate was around the 50% mark, which has brought up some concerns. So we're going to try and get some clarity on that issue in about an hour.
Yes, and on page two of the Star, continuing the vaccination topic, they have an article about statements from Kairi Jamaluddin, the Minister of Science, Technology and Innovation, who says that, you know, Malaysia's likely going to get vaccinations, going to see vaccinations in the third quarter. And in response to some of the criticism that has been floating around over why is Malaysia getting it so much later than other countries, he pointed out, well, Japan ordered their vaccines in July of last year, at the same time as Malaysia, and will get, Japan ordered its vaccines in July of last year, and they will get it at the same time as Malaysia. In other words, I think we're not the only country facing delays. So, well, ultimately, you have to remember, vaccine, not a silver bullet, maintain SOPs at all times.
And related to what we were talking about earlier, we were talking about travel about 15 minutes ago, right? And on the front page of the Malaysian Reserve, MAB poised to remain as national carrier. And MAB is Malaysia Airlines Berhad. Basically, the story goes that Malaysia Aviation Group may not proceed with its plan B to make Firefly the flag carrier. This was something that came up a few months ago in a bid to kind of restructure how the company is looking. So the restructuring, apparently MAB's restructuring talks have progressed positively to the point where consultants are now optimistic about the airline's continuing prospects. In fact, one of the quotes here is that the plan B alternative is not necessary as negotiations with creditors have been successful enough with over 75% agreeing, which means the new terms can be applied to any remaining holdouts using the UK scheme. This was Sobi Aviation's talking to the Reserve. But I guess the concept of what a successful national airline is, not a new topic to Malaysians. It's something we've been talking about for many, many years.
Yeah, so it's an ongoing saga. Anyway, Ismail Sabri, our senior minister, he's come out to justify why we need the emergency. He is saying that, for example, the armed forces could not detain illegals and had to wait for the police to arrive before any action can be taken. So what he's saying is slows down the process of arrest or even moving them into safe centres. And so, so that's the kind of quandary that they face. And he also further justified that should private hospitals not want to cooperate with them, they can actually take a legal action. Now, and I just want to end off on my side, that Utusan Malaysia has this nice page here, a nice picture here of the Agong, rowing a boat. He's gone to visit, I think, the flood survivors in Pekan. I think he's trying to lend some moral support there, and he had lunch with them. So, you know, in any case, we wish him well to stay safe.
Yeah, I mean, to consider the fact that the flooding there was so bad, and on top of that, you've got this COVID-19 situation going on. My heart really does go out to the people of the East Coast, because this is not a irregular occurrence. And in fact, it's gotten worse over the years. If you want to learn more about that, we had a call with Mercy Malaysia. You can just search that up on the BFM app or BFM website.
And also in the Star, there are a number of things about some celebrations that have been happening that happened yesterday, because yesterday was Pongal. Happy Pongal to those of you who celebrate it.
Do you celebrate it?
My family does.
And of course, so it was a little bit of a quieter celebration, I think, this year because of obviously COVID-19 SOPs. And they've also got an article looking ahead to Chinese New Year, which will likely be the same sort of situation.
Not to mention Taipusam as well will be affected by the MCO. So it will be definitely a muted celebration, if any. Yes, and I did celebrate Pongal yesterday. I had prasadam when I got home. It was lovely. It was always nice to get a bit of that. But very quickly, though, a quick headline here that Anwar Ibrahim, Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim, has apparently urged MPs to plead with the King to rescind the emergency by sending in, their own statements. So this is that ongoing saga. It looks like he's not going to back down and he's trying his way to get things across. But on this note, though, don't forget that we've got the Breakfast Grill with Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad happening at 8 a.m. today. The former Prime Minister, twice, actually. Could he be the third? Could he be Prime Minister the third time? We'll find out. But right now, we're going into a few messages, and when we come back, a look at world markets. Keep it here to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.